Case 23 from the Wumen Quan. The sixth ancestor was pursued by Ming, the head monk, as far as Taiyu Peak. The teacher, seeing Ming coming, laid the robe and the bowl on a rock and said, "This robe represents the Dharma. There should be no fighting over it. You may take it back with you." Ming tried to lift it up, but it was as immovable as a mountain. Shivering and trembling, he said, "I came for the Dharma, not the robe. I beg you, lay brother, please open the way for me." The teacher said, "Don't think good, don't think evil. At this very moment, what is the original face of Ming, the head monk?" In that instant, Ming had great awakening. Sweat ran from his entire body. In tears, he made his bow, saying, "Besides these secret words and secret meanings, is there anything of further significance?" The teacher said, "What I have just conveyed to you is not secret. If you reflect on your own face, whatever is secret will be right there with you." Ming said, "Though I practiced at Huangmei with the assembly, I could not truly realize my original face. Now, thanks to your pointed instruction, I am like someone who drinks water and knows personally whether it is cold or warm. Lay brother, you are now my teacher." The teacher said, "If you can say that, then let us both call Huangmei our teacher. Maintain your realization carefully." Wumen's comment: it must be said that the sixth ancestor forgets himself completely in taking action here. He is like a kindly grandmother who peels a fresh lychee, removes the seed, and puts it into your mouth. Then you only need to swallow it down. Wumen's verse: it can't be described, it can't be pictured, it can't be praised enough. Stop groping for it. The original face has nowhere to hide. When the world is destroyed, it is not destroyed. So I think some of us are joining with Monk Ming in sweating this morning. This is a good sign. It means you're getting close. You're very close. This great pursuit, the great pursuit of Monk Ming, the head monk, this head monk who is each one of us, sitting upright these many periods of Zazen, each one of us with some deep urgency. There are so many things in the world, so many things we might be doing. But each one of us, for some deeply mysterious reason, has been called here. I'll always remember, of course, teachings come from all over, each one of us a teacher. And when we first purchased the temple, we purchased it in August, and our first retreat was in October. Maybe 9 years ago, and we were building bunk beds so we'd have enough room for everyone, and we were taking a break sitting in the garage, and I turned to the great monk Ray and said to him, "What are the odds? 6 months ago we had no idea we would be here. What are the odds we would be here?" Ray said, 100%. So these are the odds that you would be here. 100%. Only you just didn't know until this moment. So all of us appear here, and we all have stories about why we're here or how we got here, but we actually don't know. But each one of us is pursuing something. Sometimes we call this this urge or this longing, we call it the bodhicitta, the way-seeking heart. Something that calls us to that which we cannot know. But we all have images of how it might be. And I just want to say that whatever image you have is wrong. Whatever you can think of is not the thing itself. Ultimately, Zen is a bait and switch enterprise. We tell these wonderful stories. Oh my goodness, Monk Ming, he gets to such a wonderful crisis. And I actually do love it when people in the stories come to a spiritual crisis. Not so much fun for me personally when I get there. But I love to read about it. Quite inspiring. Monk Ming, at the end of his rope. Monk Ming, who has given his heart and mind. Monk Ming, the tireless pursuer that is wrong all of the way. Remember, he is chasing after the sixth patriarch, Wei Nung, who has been given the robe and bowl by his teacher. This illiterate peasant, new to the monastery, who was given the transmission in the middle of the night and then rowed across the shore, and the teacher says, "Good luck, run fast." Maybe we should say this to all our Dharma heirs. Good luck, run fast. And of course, whatever we get, we think, oh, this will be it. When I take the precepts, when I go to the 7-day retreat, when I have that experience. And so we come for the wrong reasons. Each one of us has our secret practice, our selfish reasons, our little plan. The little self wants to get enlightened, and the little self then wants to have a parade after he or she gets enlightened. Look at how enlightened I am. And it's not even a big deal to me. We say, today's enlightenment is tomorrow's delusion. Right? So this awakening is quite oversold in the Zen tradition. These stories can be quite misleading because so many of them end, and she lived happily ever after. She saw into the nature of reality, and from then on her life was just flowers and rainbows. But all of these stories are just glimpses. They are moments in the middle of a vast space. We are all, as Julie said last night, we have all jumped from an airplane, and we are falling and falling and falling. All of us afraid, all of us confused. But in this falling, in the groundless truth of human life, this groundless truth of life and death, of impermanence, of coming into being and fading away, as she so wonderfully reminded us, there is no ground. This is the good news and the bad news. We again and again try to construct some kind of solid world we have some glimpse into the sweetness of life. Maybe in the early morning we hear the birds. Maybe some moment of just walking. Some moment of just being hot, where for perhaps just an instant we cannot remember to worry. We're too tired to worry. We're just exhausted. I would keep constructing myself, but I'm too tired, so I will take a break. I'll take one breath. And in this one breath, everything is revealed. And then everything runs and hides. The oneness breaks apart into the many. And this is the nature of realization. It is not because we can say realization, because we can say awakening, does not make it a thing. It is the arising of opening. And the danger of these stories is the images they create, that we imagine it has to be like this, and we imagine that we are not that kind of person. We imagine this is probably for some other people. But this teaching of awakening is here all the time. Every time we get lost in our thoughts, at some point we wake up. At some point, and we do not do it. But suddenly we realize, oh, I'm daydreaming again. I'm somewhere else. And these are indeed moments of awakening when we awake to the suchness of our life, the suchness of caught in the mind. We should be grateful. But so often we judge ourselves. Oh, why did I wander away again? You will wander away for the rest of your life. Might as well get used to it. Might as well enjoy it. Might as well be surprised when you wake up. And in that moment of waking up, there is a choice. And there indeed is a choice to be made. One of the Buddha's students said, well, if everything just happens and there's just causes and conditions, should we even try? Isn't trying itself wrong? And the Buddha said, no, you must have clear intention. You must do your best. And your decisions, your choices, moment by moment, make a difference. So in that moment of waking up, in that moment of, singing that song one more time, the choice is to choose to return to this breath, to return to whatever practice you are engaged in, to return to awareness of sitting upright, to return to life. And this remembering, oh, this is what I came for. This is what Monk Ming realized after all his pursuit. Maybe days, maybe weeks, maybe months he was chasing the fugitive, chasing the sixth ancestor. So this moment of waking up, this moment of remembering your deepest intention. And in some way our deepest intention is love, is to be alive. This great urge and this great beating heart of the universe that beats in you and me. So this is the possibility of appreciating the journey, appreciating wandering away, appreciating waking up, appreciating returning. And now my good Dharma brother, half-baked Dharma holder, Mike Felicky, will clarify these remarks.
So, awake to wandering off. And awake to returning. Remarkable possibility there. Ming wandering off from the temple, chasing the Dharma somewhere else. It's got to be out there if I can just get my hands on it. And there he is, all the while, perhaps months through the mountains, thinking that it's somewhere else. Thinking that he can find the Dharma outside of himself if he wanders far enough. If he is strong enough. If he can overpower Hui Neng. And when he shows up, 10 years wandering through the mountains, looking for Hui Neng, he encounters no resistance at all. Here, it's yours. In fact, it always was. And this is so startling to Ming. Perplexed, baffled, his quest already resolved. You mean I can take it? He doesn't bother. He realizes he'd been looking for something outside of himself. And when he found it, it wasn't what he needed. And he's dumbfounded by that. And this is, of course, the precious moment. The moment when he doesn't know anymore what it is that he needs and what it is that he wants. Here we all sit together in the Zendo. You know, if I could just have some more of that good samadhi juice, I know that I'd be all set. If I could just let go of my worries, arrange my life, rearrange the state of this country and the world, I'd be all right. And of course, this is the path of disappointment. For the moment when everything is rearranged and set in place and just how we want it, disappears. We can't hold on to it. We can't move it. It's like a mountain. We find ourselves stuck on an idea of what we're supposed to be. And so whenever we are not that, we think we need to become it to be free. So whenever anything else arises that doesn't quite fit into the category of what we think is good, we try to push it away, or get rid of it, look for that good old Dharma outside of ourselves somewhere. We hear again and again that that it's nothing other than what you already are in this very moment. precisely what we seek right here. Oh, but it can't be this. I mean, my knees hurt. I'm anxious. I can't really mean this. He's had some experience I haven't had. What is your original face? What are you? What am I? In this very moment, that's the turning word for me. The moment of return for him is not to find that thing that is outside of himself, but literally to see himself. To see wandering. Wandering and chasing. Wandering and chasing. Running, running, running. To finally see it. To just see it. Is to wake up. To recognize what we are. Again and again, called to turn toward what we are, toward what is, just this. What is here now? And of course, we again and again do try to pin it down and create formulas that allow us to come back in touch with some particular version of this that we like, but the content actually doesn't matter that much. Because the content is always changing. Everything goes on its own way. Nothing we really need to do about that. So we are not state chasers here. We are returning to the fundamental point, which cannot be grasped. Returning again and again to what we are. And we do hear teachings about what we are. We hear abstractions like no self or emptiness or boundlessness or oneness. But at some point we can put those down too. Emptiness is exactly form. You don't need to hold on to emptiness. And we don't need to hold on to form. There's no story you have to hold on to at all. We really can jump out of the plane without a parachute. We don't know that, and that's what's so scary. It's why, in some way, we resist it. And really, that resistance is part of the deal. The remarkable thing is that the antidote is not to resist resisting. It's to just be awake to resisting. Again and again, returning to what we are. What is your original face? Who are you? Right now. Not the story, not the great narrative about the past 24 years and I was born in. Right now. It cannot be constructed. It need not be fabricated. it is already so. These remarkable ancestors with their great wisdom not a kind of wisdom that we can hold on to or that is passed down to us in words and letters, but a practice, a curiosity, such courage and bravery for him to recognize Ming in that moment that he did not understand. Do we dare? I don't understand. Thank goodness.
Thank you. Please sit comfortably, and people behind the fireplace, if you want to come out, please move into the center row or the aisles. So, opportunity to join in the discussion. Comments, questions, what this stirs in you. What is stirring in you? Yeah, Wayne.
I think I imagined that when we were going on about the story behind the koan, and tell me if I remember it right, that the old patriarch rose Huinong across the river to get him away.
Right.
And I imagine this happening. They have to sneak off at night. They have to steal a boat or borrow it. And here's this old man doing the rowing, and rivers have currents. And I can see Huinong say, "No, I'll do it, because you have to row back." Once we're over there, and he insists on going there, and then of course he comes back.
Mm.
And this picture of him rowing while Huinong sits there with the robe of the bowl, God knows what else, tucked underneath. Maybe moonlight, maybe it's completely dark. What you have to do to handle currents in the river?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know what to say about that. Sometimes it struck me as being a summary of what, you know, didn't talk about anything, there was nothing to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to make it.
Right. I mentioned this yesterday. This also touches me, that section. And I'm curious about, how you see yourself in that situation, perhaps. I mean, there's something that really stuck. And often, these stories are full of metaphors. And some of them just roll right off of us. We don't, they don't touch us at all. But sometimes one of them sticks. And that's an indication that something to look into. Who am I in this situation? How does this speak to me? Do you have a sense of, are you Huinong there? Are you the old teacher?
Well, too old. I felt the notion of throwing across the river.
Yeah.
Here's this youngster who, he spent his entire life, doing manual labor of some kind.
Yep.
So he could just, dance right across the river. And here's the old man. Who knows what he was doing?
Mm-hmm.
And towards the end of his life, he wasn't allowed to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, maybe he was enjoying himself in a way he's not supposed to be doing.
Okay.
But then this hit me. I forgot to mention this.
Uh-huh.
All the this old patriarch, who are now going to be set up. They're going to have contacts and patrons and foundations. And he's just throwing this youngster out into the wilderness.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're going to do next. You just have to leave because you'll be dead within a month if you stay here. Go. That's it.
Yeah.
And that thought...
Yeah.
Thank you. Well explained.
Yeah.
Right. You've really shown us your heart. Mm. And that's what's important here. These there's no right or wrong around these koans, really. There's just orienting in a certain direction right into the center of your own being and seeing where that takes you.
Mm.
And then having that affirmed by another person who's done the same thing. You know, not exactly identically the same thing, but the same inquiry into what does it mean to be human, really going back to what Mike was talking about, that the center of this koan is sometimes talked about as, you know, who is your original self before your parents were born, that question that Wei Nung asks Monk Ming. And so that, you know, and Mike really took us deep into that. Who are you? Who am I? What is it? This is the essence of all the koans, all the stories. And it's what we do sitting here in the Zendo when we're not, you know, planning to buy new furniture for our living room or wondering what's on Netflix.
Yeah.
But even that, I guess, you know, that's all part of it. Right?
Yeah.
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 Oh, thank you. Do you see Jason?
No. Jason.
So one of the aspects of the story that I love is that Wayno didn't ask for any of this. Right? He's, you know, he's a woodcutter and he comes and he's like, husking the rice or whatever it is, the ration of rice. And then it's kind of the robe and the bowl are kind of gifted to him, and all of a sudden he has to make haste. Probably has to use time to like process what all this means. And you know, he doesn't just give up right away, he actually runs for quite some time until he gets against corner coming. And then he kind of, I think that feels to me like the point where he actually accepts, that seems to be the point in this word, where he actually accepts what he's been given in this role. Reluctantly.
Oh, reluctantly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He has to be cornered
first. Speaking as Tonto?
Yeah. Jason, I know you can't see me, but I'm here. What you're saying is so evocative for me of this question of why did I come here? What brought me to Zen, right? Never expected. And I think each of us has had unique experiences that somehow draw us to this practice. In some ways I feel as though I didn't ask for this. I feel like most people shouldn't ask for this. when people look at me longing and say, oh, it's so cool that you meditate, I really should do that, I often say, no, you shouldn't. And I think you're pointing to something which is really true for many of us, I think, which is that we don't know why we're here, we don't know what has drawn our hearts to this, but here we are.
Cheryl?
I was also thinking about what Wayne said about the old teacher having to row against the current and all that, but I was thinking, you know, he also had to row against the current in his mind long before that point when he decided to choose, you know, this younger monk. That was like, he knew he was totally going against the grain, and he was going to hit all kinds of opposition.
Right.
And you know, it speaks to me like I'm really identifying with that, because there are times when you just have to break the mold and do what you think you really should be doing right at that point, you know? And even if it's going against a grain of some sort, you know? And so, anyway, that's what hit me.
Well, and our whole practice is going against the grain. Right, if we flow with just the whatever the mind does, there is quite a strong mind current to take us away. You might have noticed this when you try to follow your breath. The current is strong of the incessant chatter, and I should, and I hope, and I would. So I love you pointing this out. This practice is standing for something, not just floating along the river, although there is that, you know, sometimes that aspect, but often we do need to make a stand and say, I will come back, I will sit still. Yeah, thank you.
And you know, I'm very, your comment really triggered a whole mess of insight for me just now. I'm grateful for it. I think Zen practice contains both aspects, going with the flow and going against the grain, just to mix metaphors. But we do have grain, we have rice, right? And I'm thinking back to my own life, you know, so a lot of my life, so I have tendencies in both directions. So I have tendencies to be a good girl and do what I'm supposed to do and, you know, bow to my teachers and do, you'd be blah, blah, blah. And then I also have the, wait a minute, no part of me. And both of them seem essential to Zen practice. Right? There's a time to bow and a time to say no. A time to go with the current, a time to go against the current. And I can kind of see the narrative of my own life as bowing, 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 and then too much bowing. Like too much trying to be nice to people who really I shouldn't have been nice to. Right? I can tell you lots of stories about that. And then finally waking up and going, oh no, and then too much in the other direction.
Yeah.
Right? You know, you can't do this. What do you think? So it's somehow, just like in every place in Zen, we get the opportunity to see the two opposites of everything. And the challenge is not to keep them separate, but to bring them together. So that we have a full life where we get to use all the parts of ourselves. And then when we start to veer too much in one direction, to find the middle way, right? Which isn't just some thin line between the two. It's a blending of both into a whole new kind of living. And I think that's what we're all engaged in. So thank you, Sean.
Yeah.
Was it Pam?
Yes. Well, and related to what we just discussed, Wayne and me probably are not two separate different persons, but just one person within us, inside of us.
Yeah.
And sometimes we experience searchiness as it is, because it just comes to us, and there's no way we can avoid it.
We experience what sometimes?
Suchness. Just comes to us.
Uh-huh. What's the word? Suchness.
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 Suchness. Yes.
Suchness.
Yeah, yeah. Can't avoid it. It just comes, right.
Comes.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes we feel, oh, this life's so boring. I have to change my mood and we run.
Yeah.
And even it's interesting in the story, Wayne also ran as if he could lose his own dharma. That's impossible.
Yeah.
So somehow, uh-huh. Both personalities or natures within us, yeah. Sometimes it teaches us, like, even we don't need to pretend as if we already enlightened. Oh, I got it. So now everything will be okay. That's a lie.
Yeah.
Sometimes we have to really strive.
Yeah.
As if it's really far away.
Yeah.
And sometimes when it comes, we just accept it, even though we feel I'm not worthy of it.
Yeah.
Even there's tendency, I'm still one of better one.
Yeah.
But sometimes we know it's already.
Right.
It's already there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so important to own it all. So we can notice we tend to identify with this one or that one. But these stories, as we've said so much, are our story. You know, and not only are we all the people, we're also the river and we're the boat and we're the bowl and we're the robe, we're the mountain. And I think as we practice Zen, it's not about narrowing down to less and less. It's just what you're saying, opening up. Yes, I am awakened. Yes, I am deluded. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. And then no need to protect anything. everything already protected fully. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you for the Tishos.
Can you hear us in the back?
Yeah, sorry. Thank you for that. It meant very rich for me. And I guess my question is about putting together something you said, David, and something you said, Mike, that we make choices. Our choices matter. This is something you said, David. And yet, on the other hand, Mike, you were talking about all the things we don't get to choose, and that kind of choosing is resistance, actually, to what's just happening. How do these two kinds of choices relate?
Yeah.
What do we do with our minds about these two choices?
Yeah. What's so you asked this question, which tells me that you have studied this matter. So what are some intimations you have? I think you say it quite well.
Yeah. Well, I feel like on the one hand, thinking that what I do matters is unfamiliar and strengthening. Mm. It comes to me sometimes and I think, wow, me? What I do would matter in some way? Yeah. It seems like a correction of a mistake in my mind where I thought it maybe didn't matter. But I guess as I've been sitting here these last couple days, what I've been feeling more is the mind that doesn't want to accept what's coming up and wants to manufacture a different version instead. And really sort of, you know, resistance. So that side is stronger right now, you know. But I really feel like I mistake one kind of choosing for the other, I think. Mm-hmm. Which is why I ask what the difference is.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Everybody looks to Mike.
So for me too, this is a real, we were talking intention yesterday as well, and for me it's a really important practice point that when I come to the cushion, I definitely hold intention. I don't come and just kind of decide I'm going to daydream the day away. There is a quality of looking, of really looking, of curiosity, of who am I? Maybe not those words, but the looking with the intent. Who am I? What is this moment? What's happening now? And you know, beneath that, there's a quality of I actually don't know. I can't know in advance, so I don't know. And so the question is real for me. It's true. It's reflecting something. And then so there is intention to be awake. And often what that can be is the sound of birds and, you know, sweetness and what have you. But there are times where it's not. And I guess I don't feel a lot of capacity to choose what arises. Mm. What I feel that I have is the capacity to choose to see it, to attend to it, to notice it, to be awake to it, and maybe not always, but that is the practice for me. It's been helpful for me to let go of feeling that it's going to result in or needs to result in a particular outcome. Mm-hmm. That has, for me, has been a burden and causes suffering and is not helpful. But the curiosity is very is the, for me, is the heart of the practice.
Thank you for your question. I can feel my insides are going like this.
So it's like, I have to speak. Yeah. And I probably will lose my voice at some point with the vibration inside me. What's arising for me around this question that you ask is that sometimes the only place I can start is with the resistance. And when the resistance is there, this is what is arising. And I, as Mike just so beautifully said, I actually don't get a choice about what is arising. It's here. And Jagel pointed to this too. Sometimes the suchness just comes, right? And sometimes for me, it comes in the form of, I hate this. I truly hate this. And I sometimes think, really? You're a Zen person and you're saying you hate this? Right? What about the precepts? What about all these vows you took? What about, right? To be loving and kind. And I hate this! Right? And it's the only place I can be at that moment. It's the only place I can start in that moment. And as much as I wish it were different, my experience is that it is, it's an amazing place to start. Because it's in that place that this happens. Where I meet myself the way I am. With I hate this, or why does it have to be this way? Or why do people have to hurt so much? Or why can't we just get along? These are some of the things that make the inside of me shake. And this is suchness. This is where I start.
Troublemaker, William. No, there are these places, and we touch, and of incredible energy, and the valence can change. I really love this. I really hate it. But you know, Laura, thank you so much for demonstrating, for sharing this place that we all know, this place of great pain and confusion and aversion. Even this gets included. Yeah. So last remark, Julie.
Also coming on this, when you were talking, that the way it hit me was this realization that what I do matters. And then from that second part of feeling resistance, and what if the opportunity comes and I blow it? Mm-hmm. And I fail?
Yeah.
You know, the opening comes and I miss it and, you know, I'm a failure. And I think there are two parts of that. You know, one is all of my stories about success or failure are stories. And the sooner I can see that line coming up, it's, you know, yes, you said the line, but yeah, today's enlightenment is tomorrow's delusion.
Yeah,
I mean, as soon as I feel like success, you know, I build a temple, and as soon as I feel like a failure, you know, that whole thing runs again. But then, you know, as Laura just demonstrated, that facing into that resistance, facing to that feeling of I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's suchness.
That's
right
it.
There. Mm-hmm. Right there.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently it's everywhere. So on that note, let's come back into our Zen posture.